how to put it.
Ian Tafoya is completely opposite of me in politics and political philosophy. This Denver activist and former candidate for mayor has different solutions for homelessness, but can they work? I'm John Caldera. This is the audio version of our television show, Devil's Advocate. You can watch that show by going to our YouTube channel, IITV. That stands for Independence Institute TV. Please subscribe and share this podcast. Enjoy.
Ian Tafoya is executive director of Green Latinos Colorado, which sounds awfully racist to me. So is it easy being green?
Absolutely. It's easy as being green on St. Patrick's Day.
But Latinos are not Irish.
No, we're definitely not Irish, but we definitely love the earth and all plants that are green.
All plants that are green?
I can't think of a
poison
plant.
Poison ivy?
Like.
You like poison ivy?
Yeah, it has a purpose.
It has a purpose?
Wouldn't be here if it didn't.
Thistleweed?
Absolutely.
Russian olives, an invasive species?
Well,
invasive species
in Colorado, that's a different conversation.
Well, no.
We could still appreciate it as a plant, necessarily.
But do you love it?
I love all the invasive species? I actually did my undergrad research on increasing yields in greenhouses, so scientists at heart love plants.
Really? What kind of greenhouses? Are we talking pot or are we talking food?
Well, interestingly enough, when I went to work for City Hall, I got assigned to the marijuana committee because they go, Ian, you studied plants. It has nothing to do with making plants when you're setting up taxing structures, distances for businesses, or anything else.
You've run for office a couple times, city council and
Denver mayor.
Haven't made it yet. What made you want to do that?
Well, the first time I ran for city council, I was sitting around in committee where they were talking about the Central 70 expansion. Talking about $2 billion for 2 miles of highway. Insane, just insane. And the environmental impacts on the community that I grew up in made me want to run for office. The second time I chose to run for mayor is because we had the Fair Election Fund, which I helped pass. And it seemed like the perfect opportunity to get yourself in the mix. And I learned that one council member, it was a real struggle to create the change you want. The real power in a strong mayor system is with the mayor.
All right. So getting back to the green world. This is what you do. And you wanted to be mayor. Now the Alzheimer's collected. You wanted to be mayor. Let's talk first about the homeless situation.
Oh.
You mentioned before you too have bundled up trash to bring it down to City Hall. Why is that?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny that we both ended up doing that. So I founded a group called the Headwaters Protectors. People might look this up. It's a group of individuals that are going out to provide trash service, water service, the things that we needed to do that Mayor Hancock was not doing. And they spent about $60,000 clearing out a homeless encampment, saying that it was important to protect the river. It was right next to the river. We go down there, riddled with needles and other sorts of trash. And I go, well, you spent $60,000 and you left it like this and you tell me it's about safety. It's not. So we actually sat around, bagged it all up. We were gonna dump it on the stairs like you did, but we thought better of that, thinking that was gonna be somebody else's job at the city. That wasn't their fault. So we put it in the dumpsters behind and we rolled up, dropped it out, filled up the dumpsters. Security came out. We recorded a message to the mayor and we said, you're moved, Mayor Hancock.
And did he do anything?
Actually, we ended up coming to a better partnership with Mayor Hancock, at least in supporting when we could get trash services out to the people. But clearly the situation is not solved.
How's Mayor Johnston doing? On homelessness, let's be precise.
Well, yeah, I had the opportunity to chair Mayor Johnston's transition committee for homelessness. I think that he's pursuing a path that's gotten people off of the streets and into more safe situations. I am a little concerned about the cost of putting people into hotels or these tiny home villages, but I think we're on the right track. You can ask any of the businesses down off of Stout Street. I know many of them. They are happy.
There's no doubt there are 1,000-ish people that were given at least temporary housing. And when housing is 2 weeks and you're considered that's housing, that's a funny way to say we've gotten people off the streets. The idea of keeping them off the streets is the big issue. For me, it's the crime. It's the open drug use. It's the litter. It's the feces. It's the vomit. It's the urine that Denverites have to not only clean up, but then pay for the services for people who are doing it. My simplistic view is enforce the laws, and that those people who make crimes, do crimes, when they're put into jail, they can get the help they need. Instead of buying hotels and putting out an advertisement to come to Denver, we'll get you a hotel room. I think that's completely the wrong way to do it. I think it sends the wrong incentive. Do you?
What I would say is that the statistics show us that 80% of the people who are homeless on our streets at least are come from Colorado. So it's not people who are flocking here from another state. These are people who are suffering on their ability to buy housing as rents are going up. Some of the situations you're talking about, trash, water service, public restrooms. We don't have a strong public trash system. We don't have a strong public restroom network. And I think that
there are
those
trash cans all over the city.
I would disagree with that one.
Where I've had to pick up feces and cans and broken bottles and needles was within 20 feet of a dumpster.
You know, where are you seeing dumpsters still?
Right here.
Oh, the privatized dumpsters that are locked or unlocked. I'm not sure. I do know people dump in those. Having spent, I mean, I'm telling you, I've spent countless of hours working with the unhoused on the streets directly. We don't have a public restroom network. We have built one or maybe two since Robin Kenich, councilwoman, was pushing for those. Those made no sense to me in the sense that they spent like $150,000 to tap it in the ground. My stepfather was a plumber. Well, we've invested billions of dollars into a wastewater system that has all these empty buildings that are like have restrooms in them and they don't get used. So I actually had an idea when I was running for mayor about how do we set up a contract service so we can operate public restrooms, or better yet, maybe we can ask a business to open their restroom to public and we can take off some of their taxes or some other sort of incentive that gets them to keep their business open.
No business wants the bums off the street to walk through their restaurant to use their facilities. Yeah, we understand there's a whole spectrum of people who are unhoused, as they say. And some of them are people who are really hard on their luck, but that is a minority. We have people who have drug dependency issues, we have mentally ill people, and we have people just living a lifestyle. And these are people who need to be taken off the streets. While you say they come from Colorado, a lot do, a lot don't. But there are other places in Colorado that don't have these problems. Interestingly, there are places that don't cater to the homeless.
Can you
Boulder
an example?
And Denver cater to the homeless. Loveland doesn't have this problem. Loveland's police chief was very clear. You see somebody on private property, you give me a call, we'll arrest them. You don't want to hang out there. Colorado Springs is another fine example. Yeah, they have homeless, but not nearly the same for a city that's almost as large as Denver, because they enforce the camping bans. And they put people into either jail or into the shelter where they have to do some work. Mm. Instead, they come up to Denver. So from my point of view, all we're doing is encouraging this. And the more we encourage it, the more we're gonna get.
Well, I would say across the state of Colorado, there are unhoused issues, whether you're in Durango, you're in Grand Junction.
Nothing like
you're
here.
In Roaring Fork Valley. They live up behind the Walmart. I've been there.
Is it anything like in Denver?
Well, certainly Denver's the largest city. We have a large housing crisis. People are living in Denver. We do have services here.
It's
I can
not
tell
nearly
you,
as bad in Lakewood, which is right next door, or even Aurora, which
is
right next
door. Well, I
actually
live on the border of Lakewood and Denver, and I can tell you all along the Bear Creek that people are pointing fingers like this. That's why I ran on regional cooperation. This is a scenario where Denver's picking up the tab for a housing crisis as an actual regional problem. That's why people were in Lakewood this week talking about a navigation center. We need the outside suburbs to take their piece because the homeless population is occurring. People are becoming homeless in every single city in Colorado every day.
People are encouraged to become homeless. It seems to me, what do you expect from the homeless? Do they have any responsibility?
Certainly.
In other words, what is the accountability
Certainly.
That when there's someone who is homeless and they're just staying in a new hotel room or a new shelter and getting meals cooked for them, what is the expectation? And then what is the consequence if they don't meet that expectation?
I think a lot of the scenarios you're talking about, they have rules that they're expected to follow internally. And if they don't, then they can't be participating in that type of program. I can tell you with Headwaters Protectors, when we roll up to a place where they have no trash service, every other taxpayer in Denver has trash service. So even if you're working and you're working unhoused, it was
answering my question.
Hold on a second. It was just impossible for people to actually like get the trash service. So when we provided it and we roll up and we open up our trailer and we have all the tools, the people jump in and they start to help. And I'll be honest with you, there is some tough love in it. There are some individuals who aren't doing the work and they get felt guilty when all of a sudden people start picking up trash around them and they jump in. There is a group mentality.
So
think about that.
The accountability is they feel guilty. The consequence is they feel guilty. Not that they're going to go without food.
You know, well, without food in your house isn't very likely because there's so much food being distributed by people on the streets.
You know, for instance, at the Colorado Springs Mission, you're expected to do certain jobs. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone gets fed, but if you do your job, you get the hot meal during lunchtime. You don't do your job, well, you'll get a sandwich at another time, and it's not nearly as good. But you'll get fed, but there is some sort of consequence. I see no consequence. I see people who get arrested for stealing cars and then are out in a couple hours. What are the consequences? What are the legal consequences for someone who refuses to stay in a shelter?
Well, we don't have a law that says that you have to seek shelter. I would never arrest somebody and put them through a system. You have to sit there and you have to talk with them. My mother being a social worker, I can tell you that those individuals need care. We have to find a way for creating stability for the 80% of people that don't need as much services, right? They don't need as much wraparound services. Let's find stability for them, and then we can begin to target the rest of those resources at those individuals. What you're bringing up about food, I just want to make very clear for all the listeners out here. There is an uncoordinated mutual aid effort that is taking place from both people in the suburbs and well-meaning churches. When 9 churches come on a Sunday and deliver food to the same encampment, and that encampment has no trash service, all they're doing is actually creating a public health crisis. They feel good. The situation for the people on the streets does not improve because they can't handle anything but single meals. And when they get 9 of them at the same time, it brings the rats, that brings the city. Some of the situation is being dumped on the unhoused, and I've seen it firsthand.
Don't think you're answering my question. So if someone is put in housing,
yes,
we're paying for the housing, we're paying for the food, we're paying for the medical care. If they don't stay in that housing and still want to live on the streets, get 9 free meals at a time instead of 1, what should the consequence be for that person? Well, should there be any legal consequence, or should he just be free to do that when you've provided a bed for him?
I think a majority of the people that you're talking about that truly want to live on the streets, those individuals you don't see very often.
They find
places to sleep that you don't see very often. The true people
behind the bushes in my office, mm-hmm. on the doorstep of my office, around the side of my office. Yes, I've seen them and chased them away many times. So the answer is you don't think there should be a legal consequence for those people who continue to stay outside.
Well, I think a lot of the situations you're talking
about. That's a trick
question. No, I know it's not a trick question. What I'm saying to you is I don't think it should be against the law to exist. I think people have the right to survive. If you're outside and you have to find a way to survive, I would prefer finding locations like safe outdoor spaces where we can actually coordinate trash services, water, among other things. Look at the Bureau of Land Management versus the National Park Service. They have certain rules for some others.
You made your point about trash, and a good one. I'm just saying that.
But you're talking about violating laws like stealing and all these other things. Those are other laws that they can be held accountable. The idea of surviving on the street. Well, that's a different conversation than dealing with housing, is it not?
I think there's a big connection. So would you hold them accountable for their crimes, such as crapping on private property, breaking property, stealing property, and would you jail them for that?
Okay, so I'll take them in order you're talking about. If somebody is stealing property or breaking property, they already have laws for that. They'll see their day in court. I had a chance to work for the public defender before. They will have their day in court on that.
They never have.
That is not something that a person who's elected has the ability to do. That's a judge or a jury that makes those decisions. Okay?
No, I disagree. I think a city council and a DA and a mayor have a lot to say about enforcement of these laws. And you might say they'll have their day in court, but they have to be arrested first to have their day in court. The people I see around here are never arrested. The cops will come and shoo them along. And they have this wonderful saying, I'm going to come back in 15 minutes, the cop says. And if you're still here, I'm going to arrest you. So they leave. That's mm-hmm. not enforcing the law.
Well, I think the last one that you were talking about there with people defecating in the streets, the real symptom there is that people don't have access to restrooms. We got to figure that out.
What about the ones that defecate on our doorstep or vomit on our doorstep?
I feel like living off of Colfax is a real hard place to be.
So it's our fault.
It's been that way my entire life here along Colfax. I don't know if it's your fault. All I'm saying to you is that people not having access to restrooms is a real solvable problem.
Somebody,
if people are pooping on your door in particular, it might be because they don't like you, and we got to figure out why they don't like you.
Nobody likes me, but even if they don't like me. We've had drunks walk up in the middle of the day and just vomit on our doorstep. They didn't know where they were. They had no idea mm-hmm. where they were. Mm-hmm. But it was private property. So why is it that I have to clean this up and they don't? Or the city doesn't have to come and hose it down and clean it up? I have caught people
How do you decide when government's too big or too small?
Don't answer a question with a question.
If you want the government to come clean it up, then you want a bigger government that's going to do beautification projects.
What I want is for them to be arrested. That is what I want. But you're saying that it is my responsibility, either by paying taxes to have somebody clean it up or for me to clean it up. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying there isn't a program that exists to clean it up. That's actually what I'm saying. And I'm saying that I think it's a symptom, right? If somebody is consistently having to defecate.
But you're saying outside, it's my responsibility.
It's because they don't have access to public restrooms.
Ian, no, I just want to make clear. As the property owner, it should be, it's fine with you that I have to clean this up.
No, I know. I want to be very clear. I do not like the idea of anyone defecating outside because guess what? Our sewers go straight to our river. It's not cleaned up. We have E. coli issues in our river. We get the water first in Denver. And yet it's the filthiest in the entire state when it leaves. We have a responsibility in Denver to actually create that network that I'm talking about. And if you have a network of public restrooms and people are still defecating outside, that's a different question.
All right, so first we have to build the spaces for them. Then we need to build not just the places for them to live that have toilets, but now we need to put out toilets in public places. And then when the guy vomits on my doorstep, then should the cops come and pick him up?
What law are you going to hold someone accountable for vomiting, John?
Trespassing is one.
Okay.
Littering is another. Defecating in public is another.
Does vomiting count as littering? I actually don't know about that in statute.
The point is, somebody's got to clean it up.
Yes.
And the people who do it aren't.
This is the difference in visions.
I believe people are doubly victimized when you don't enforce this law. The people who need help aren't going to get their help. They're just being enabled with more stuff, 9 meals when they need one, hotel rooms, and they're being enabled that somebody else comes and cleans up their stuff. But then the people who have to pay for all this are being victimized, and the people who have had their property stolen, broken, vomited on, the needles in the parks, These are everyone else. And while there might be 1,000 or 2,000 street people in Denver, there's 800,000 people in the city and county of Denver.
Yes.
Don't they deserve to be free of victimization as well? And so it seems as though we're enabling this. And my vision is that we've got to have accountability to these individuals.
Yes.
Your vision seems to be we need to cater more to these individuals, and then maybe their lives will improve, and they'll stop doing this.
I think that could be true. I think that my vision is centered in humanity and environmental impacts.
And
which
do you believe mine
is
not?
Well, I don't know, but that statement says that I don't care about humanity,
or I don't care about a clean society.
I don't care
about these people. You know. Because of these policies, I am caring less and less about these people. I am seeing them less and less as humans, as I once did, and I'm seeing them more as vermin who that are out of control, and the city refuses to enforce the laws. And so you have 800,000 people being victimized, and not helping this person isn't humane as well. And so when you say, I take the humane side, I find that pretty insulting.
Well, I'm sorry that you feel insulted by describing the way I approach the solution for the unhoused. What I will say is that if you'd like to see the vision that I believe, you can go look at the mayor's transition housing plan that includes some of the Housing 1000 and what moves beyond that. You can look at my record with Headwaters Protectors. You can still see online my plan and my vision for housing. When I'm saying this idea of being centered in humanity and in the environment is we have to find solutions that work for these individual people. Some of those are safe outdoor sites. Some of those are tiny home villages. Some of those are family-oriented housing. All of the individuals who are experiencing homelessness do need different care. And what I'm saying to you is we have to start at the very basics, the human rights component of access to clean water and sanitation, and then we add in safety. And then hopefully these people begin to self-actualize. And I do believe in those programs. We have seen it be successful with housing first programs.
Your key word there was hopefully.
Yeah, well, what else do we have but hope, John?
We have laws. We have all sorts of systems, and we see alternative systems working in other places. Again, no one seems to ask, why do they have such a small problem in Colorado Springs when we have such a large problem here? Are they less compassionate? No, they actually help people get on their feet. When they have a case, they bring people from the city, from charity, from private sector, all to stylize a program for that person. But it means nothing if there's not some sort of accountability for one's actions. And what I see in my years being here is that there is no accountability. There is no responsibility. Hell, when you can steal a car, I talked to a cop, my favorite story, talked to a cop who said, I arrested a guy for stealing 4 cars, and then later on that afternoon, I arrested him again for stealing a car. Oof. And because they don't stay in. And therefore, what about those 5 people who lost their car, their mobility, their ability to go to school or work?
Is this person homeless in this story, though? So, like, I think you're conflating this idea that all unhoused people are criminals. I don't think that's true.
I think most of them are.
Okay.
I think most of them have committed crimes. Now, mind you, we're all criminals. If you show me the man, I'll name the crime. Okay. But I believe these people don't live up to any sort of responsibility. And that's bad for them.
It is bad for them, but it impacts all of us. And that's why we have to invest in resources to center their humanity and help them out.
How much of the city budget would you put towards helping the homeless?
Well, shoot. I mean, we've already expanded over $100 million trying to help with the housing crisis, building more housing. I think that is fundamentally one difference between Colorado Springs and Denver. I don't have the statistics in front of me, of course, but I feel like our housing crisis is deeper here.
It's pretty bad out there. Homes are pretty expensive, too.
It's everywhere across the state. I travel everywhere across the state with my job, and it's a challenge. And when I see the unhoused, the groups that are advocating for the unhoused in these other cities have called Headwaters Protectors to ask us, what can they do to help deliver some of these services? Because actually, washing your hands, right, the very Jesus and godly thing to do, also doesn't transmit disease, and it's good for public health. And so if we can center public health and the most basic solutions from the start, I think we can get to some of the deeper issues. And it's costing us because these individuals don't have health care except for Medicaid, and the sicker they get, the more we pay. And that's equally true for the environment, right? When we talk about the impacts of pollution, the most low-income people who are being impacted by pollution, we end up picking up that tab in Medicaid.
So my question was, out of 100% of a city budget, how much would you put
100%?
Aside? How much of a city budget as a percentage would you put towards servicing the homeless?
Well, I'm trying to actually do the math on the $1.8 billion that we have right now in our budget, but I think that the housing budget right now is pushing about 15%. I think that we clearly have more work to do because people are struggling for housing, both homelessness and people on the margins. And so I, for example, would rather put more money into housing and other services that improve people's lives than, say, spending more money on war.
Well, I think we'd all feel that way. So more than 15%.
Yeah, if it's going to solve our problem.
And what if it doesn't? Would half? Is it unlimited?
Unlimited?
I mean, at what point does Ian Tafoya go, listen, we only have 100% of our budget, and we have 800,000 people who need roads and services and fire and all the rest. At what point does Ian Tafoya say, this is my limit for money for the homeless?
I don't know if I could tell you a limit right now, but what I'll tell you is I'm at the limit of Denver being the only city that seems to be taking a large responsibility here when we know, because we have the services that people from unhoused in the surrounding suburbs are coming to Denver. We need the regional.
Of course they're coming to Denver. You're giving the services.
We need the regional cooperation of other individuals. And I want to applaud Jefferson County and Lakewood for their navigation center. We need to see an effort. Aurora opened up their safe camping sites and safe parking initiatives. I'm very grateful for that. We need every community to step up on a housing crisis. And Denver has bared it for too long. And I don't know if I would say
is
a random number like 8% or 9.
Is it possible that once Hickenlooper put his pipe dream of a road home, which no one believed was going to happen, somewhat 17 years ago, to end the homelessness permanently in 10 years, so we're 7 years overdue, that what he did was to create a system that made it more attractive for these people to come to Denver than, say, other parts of the metro area?
I think human beings are going to go to where resources are allocated. I think if that's the argument that you're making, but if those resources, like social impact bond programs, actually have metrics to decide whether they're actually working and the efficacy of the program works, then we should invest in it. And if it isn't, we shouldn't.
Switch gears to the migrants. Denver has more migrants coming here per capita than any city in America.
Yes.
How's the city handling it?
As best as we can. I'm really disappointed to see that we're not seeing movement on immigration reform at the federal level where we think this needs to take place. And we are one of the closest cities to Texas. It's the cheapest bus route. We're going to continue to see people coming here. And honestly, climate crisis, which I believe is real, and most people do, including the scientists, says that we're going to see more climate migration. And so I think this is just a first wave of what it looks like from people migrating from Central America north into America. And we're in Colorado, or right there, we're the headwater state. We have resources, and I think that we're going to continue to see people coming here. How are we handling it? I think we're doing the best that we can, but we're not, again, seeing regional cooperation. I had a chance to have a conversation with the Jefferson County Commissioner recently, and I said, we need your help. This is too much for one city to bear. And this is a issue that's being faced by people all across the country. I am desperate, I think, like the current mayor, to see action at the federal level to resolve this.
Would you support the action of actually enforcing the immigration laws and making sure that people do not come across? In other words, I'm not saying build a wall, but stop the immigration. We've had, 9 million illegal immigrants in the last few years literally an incredible, it's not hyperbole to say invasion. That means, I don't think it's organized, but you've got millions of people spilling over the border. So would you like Biden to do his job and stop the flow and keep those people from crossing the river?
Whew. Well, I should also preface by saying that my fiance is Venezuelan. My fiance was actually brought here undocumented as a youth and was one of the first deferred action recipients in the country. What I think is we have a broken immigration system that costs too much. I hear what people are saying. In particular, I was at the city council for Lakewood on Monday. When my relatives immigrated to the United States in the late 1800s, all they did is have to show up and put their name on the line. Nowadays, we have a much more complicated system, and I think what you're hearing from Mike Johnston, the mayor, and from others who are advocating is we have to find a way to improve this system so that people can come here legally and follow the paperwork. And I will tell you how broken it is because my fiance, her own relatives, her sisters, her father, her grandparents were American citizens. So she was born in Venezuela. She was struggling to find her way here. And I think that the people who are coming here want to work. You've heard it straight from their mouths. And so can we find a way to, whether it's through HB visas, getting them set up? And we
the question
need,
was,
yes, do we want to stop
would
the
you
flow?
Would you have Biden stop the flow and prevent people from spilling into the nation, into the country?
Well, the people who are coming here that get their day in front of an administrator who are filling out their paperwork, who are looking for asylum or refugee status, they deserve to come over. They're following the rules. They're getting their day. We need to make sure that they get back to those hearings so that we can suss it out and get them into the working population of America.
So in other words, let them all come in, as many as can, get their refugee status until there's a hearing some years later to find out if they're legal to stay.
Well, hopefully it's not years later, and I think that's the whole point. If you dig deep into the policy that they've been trying to pass over the last few days, is that they want to put more resources into these hearing officers so that we can build up a system and we can actually move people. This is what the mayor has been talking about. When we immigrate people from Ukraine or from Afghanistan or any of these other places, it's actually coordinated. The people in the different cities are talking to each other. What is so broken about what is happening right now is we have people using human beings as political pawns, putting them on a bus, sending them to where they can freeze to death without a coat. Come on, we can all agree that's not a good idea.
I think it's actually a superb idea. I think Greg Abbott has done more to shine the light on immigration than any governor. And all these wonderful cities that say we're sanctuary cities, well, then here you are, be a sanctuary. I agree with you. When your ancestors came here, when mine came here, mine came through Ellis Island, but a lot of came here illegally, but there was no net to hold them. There was no social net. There was no schools were not what they are. They didn't get medical services. They didn't get food. They didn't get housing. They didn't get this. They had to go and find their own clan and learn the language. And those people who were already there had to support them. It was, or how to put it this way, it's not the state of immigration. It's the welfare state. That's the problem.
What do you call the Homestead Act? But giving people land in order to have assets to develop wealth. I mean,
I'm happy giving people land. I would love to take all this land that we're not using and give it to people to use.
But I'm saying that was a safety net. That's the point I'm making, right? Is the homes, they didn't show up and get nothing. They showed up here and they could sign on a dotted line with the Homestead Act and all of a sudden get their space in order to pursue the American dream. All these individuals are asking for is a work permit so that they can begin to do the same thing.
How many people in the world, there's 7-8 billion people in the world.
Yeah.
I'm assuming half of them would love to live in America.
If that was the case, why wouldn't we see more people trying to immigrate here?
I think they do.
I can even tell you with the Venezuelans, my partner's family fled communism and socialist dictatorship that came through socialism, right?
To come to Denver
to come to Denver.
To get Denver socialism.
No, she moved here because her sister was here, who was an American citizen, and her mother, who had a visa, came here to do that work and to get a job and to escape a situation in which literally the day they decided to leave was the day they shut off the TV stations who were speaking out against the government. That lack of freedom and inability to have social mobility was why they left, and that is why these individuals are leaving now. You've read about the inflation. You've read about all these issues. They want to come here to work.
I agree. I want to welcome them here to work. And I agree with you in the world of that people should come here, get a work permit, work here, and carry their own weight. And that the system is completely broken.
It is.
And that needs to be fixed. That being said, there's also the side of saying we have immigration laws that are not being enforced. That when you have people spilling over the border and coming in illegally, then those laws are not enforced either. It's not either or. They both need to happen. I guess my larger question is, how many people would you like to come to America if we had open borders? Because it sounds like you're an open borders guy if they can work.
I'm not sure I understand your question. I would say that the Statue of Liberty says, give us your tired, your weak, your hungry, the people who want to come here to work. I was in your office earlier, your boardroom, talking about the Bill of Rights, the foundational rights that people want. That's what these people want. They're leaving broken, chaotic governments, and they want to come here and work. So I would say, if you're interested in coming here and you want to work, I would welcome you. And I would love for people to go through their proper process. A lot of the people you're talking about pouring over the border, they're turning themselves in immediately, asking for asylum to go through the rules. To go through the rules in order to try to find out whether or not they qualify or not. The difference is do we want to keep them in camps on the Mexican border, or do we rather bring them in and provide some level of humanity to individuals where the churches and the excess and the abundance of our society can help support them?
How much abundance are we talking about? You know, the difference is that we have people here and we have governmental needs. We need to have core governmental services. Our roads are crap. Our police are underfunded. We've got in Denver, 200 vacancies in the police department. There are services that need to happen for people who are paying taxes. I mean, I get the idea. People are streaming across the border. We want to be as humane and as supporting as possible. But at some point, it becomes unaffordable. At some point, there's not enough rich guys to pay for all those people. You can't take money and keep doing it. Well, you're running a debt now of, $40 trillion. It is unsustainable to do this.
I would disagree with you about where our police force is at. Somehow we're supposed to be cutting resources, but at the same time, the police are asking for license plates readers, right? And they want larger budgets for lots of things. When I see the police driving around in a giant tank that they got an army surplus, I say the city of Denver doesn't need that, right? And I think there are a lot of people on my side of the political spectrum who believe that the amount of resources that we pour into the trillions that have disappeared from the Department of Defense and from the local police departments could be reallocated for housing and roads and any of the other issues that you want to talk about. We know that they're the largest part of our budget. And so if we're going to talk about where we can cut out slivers, to me, that's a place I'd like to.
You defund police?
Reallocate resources away. Yes, absolutely.
How much would you reallocate away?
Well, I haven't had a chance to take over the budget because I'm not the mayor of Denver. What I can tell you is the community came together and produced a document about reimagining police and safety. And we talked about how some of those resources could be reallocated. Now, I could say if we created an Office of Neighborhood Affairs that helps with some of these solutions that the community has come together to highlight, and it still lived in the police department, and you called it police spending, so be it. The point is we need to reallocate away from that to delivering the resources that people need, which is housing, food, clean water, transportation, those issues you're talking about.
I don't think we need to deliver those services. We need to deliver opportunity. And every time we take a dollar away from the private sector, you're taking away opportunity. And that you want these people to have jobs, unless they work for the government, and maybe that's a goal. We need to have a system that is not overtaxed so that entrepreneurs can risk their wealth and try to build businesses which provide services but also employ people. So I see what you're trying to do as well-intentioned but completely unsustainable. I believe the nation is on an unsustainable path because we're making money up out of thin air, and that never goes well. It might be 10 years, it might be 100 years, but when that bubble breaks, it will be devastating. That's what I worry about. We've just crossed over what I think is a budget Rubicon. We are spending less on defense now than we are spending on servicing the national debt, just paying interest payments.
Tell me about it.
All right, so we need a system that allows. Here in Colorado, when you've got a minimum wage of well over $18, people have to pay into the Family Leave Act, you have more regulations than ever before, it is becoming harder and harder for a small business to start.
Small business owner over here, and for many years, absolutely.
What business did you own?
I've owned a business that worked on community engagement and festivals and media production. So I worked for the Underground Music Showcase, the People's Fair, among others, right? So I would go and talk to neighbors about the impact of festivals. I also would do ticketing, many other things, right? Producing radio, media content. And it is tough when you have to set aside 30% in your 1099 and you're wondering if you have enough left over at the end. I can tell you that's why I'm a supporter, you know, of Medicare for All, single payer healthcare, because what's the number one reason? What's the number one reason I feel like people don't leave their jobs to become entrepreneurs is because they're afraid to lose their healthcare. And going out on the market, it's really difficult. And so I think that that's something that can level the playing field for small businesses.
So we wrap this up. It seems like our difference in visions is that for me, every vision is a opportunity that people for take risk to have responsibility for their own actions. What I'm hearing from you is that there's pretty much a governmental program to solve every woe.
I wish.
Just wanted to start a new program for neighborhood involvement with the police. You've talked about Medicaid for All. You've talked about more services for the homeless, even though 15% or so is going there already.
Well, that's housing in general.
But housing in general. So it seems as though you've got a lot more faith in the governmental bureaucracy than I have. Would that be a good way to put it?
I think that's probably true. Yeah, I would definitely say that's true. A little faith in the government to deliver on the resources that we need. But I think that the programs that I have seen work, and being a person who's worked in the local government, I can see it be really successful in changing people's lives.
Ian, this has been wonderful. Thank you for doing it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here. I appreciate it. And I'd love to come back to talk about more environmental issues.
I'll be up for it. We'll do it.
Okay.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Devil's Advocate, I hope you'll share it with a friend. And I hope you'll subscribe and follow the show. We have new ones released weekly. Remember, this audio was taken from our TV show. To watch it, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.